This is Patrick Gleason, and you've reached a higher level of Nerdvana.
It's game time.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Okay.
Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh.
End of line.
We're back, and yes, I know you're looking at this description and going, what, another After Dark episode after you teased us with a full episode last time? Yeah, well, you know, life getting in the way and all, we wanted to get something out, and so me, Jeremy, and Noah are here right now.
It's down amazing.
Shooting the breeze around the game table. And Jeremy was just about to go into his description of World of Darkness.
That I already did!
Yeah, I know. Now you have to. It actually didn't happen because it wasn't recorded. So,
things like that. We were talking about the difference between like
Monty Cook's World of Darkness and
World of Darkness and the other World of Darkness, and just how I don't really like playing in the World of Darkness as if it's the World of Darkness, in the sense that the mythology is real, because
you don't like playing. You don't like playing their overarching plot.
As
is what you're
if
saying.
It's real, yes. I like it as it's a myth.
Okay, so you're saying you know the vampires believe that,
right?
As opposed to you, if you follow the storyline of the game, this will actually happen.
If you follow the storyline, this will happen.
Gotcha. Because that makes more sense.
That to me. Okay, so like the mages, as I was saying earlier, the mages all become gods if they survive long enough. That's just going to happen.
Right.
And really that's just power gaming. But that's built in.
Right.
The story. I mean,
well, there's also terrible backlash, and as I've heard from you guys having played mage, depending on how your GM is, that could be completely...
depending on how much of a dick your GM wants to be.
Even if the
paradox can either be a game element or a way to screw your players.
Even if the technomancers win, guess what? They become gods.
Right? Yes.
At some point, one of the groups become a god. Okay, so fine. Okay, well
essentially you had their different aspects. I mean, you had the Weaver, the Worm, and the Wild, I think were the three spheres or three entities out there. Yeah.
Okay.
But mages dealt more with the Weaver.
Okay, cool.
And what were their names? The Technocracy?
Yeah.
Those guys, they were very much about the Weaver, because the Weaver weaves its web and it stays that way. The Worm comes in, decays it, and the Wild comes in and just messes everything up.
And then the Worm is...
Yes.
So, Law, Chaos, and Dick.
Yes.
Yes. So, with the Vampire, the Vampires,
you survive.
You're more powerful, you survive, and then when you're on the crust of being cool, the old ones wake up,
say,
and kill everybody.
Basically, they're jealous.
I hate it when that happens.
And if I was living in that one, if I was that vampire, my whole goal would be to get in a spaceship
and leave.
And leave.
Mm-hmm.
Or get in the spaceship and destroy those old ones and then drink their blood. So I was that old one, and then I get in another spaceship and leave. I don't want to kill everybody. That's dumb.
So
I become a god.
Okay.
Over here. So, because the other vampires are over here and they want to try drinking my blood. Screw that. I'm out.
Cool.
Out. Werewolves. Something horrible happens and they all die. I don't know. I'm not up on the werewolf part. But they're going to all die. Fair enough. It's depressing and they die.
Fair enough.
Yeah, the werewolves are about fighting the worm.
And they die.
Yes.
In the end, they die. It's depressing. So instead, yes, it's a myth.
The whole thing really with werewolves is live fast, die young. That's right. Pretty much it.
So instead, you
really run into old werewolves.
The wizards do the wizard thing.
Yeah.
And it's a myth. Aww. The vampires do their politics thing. And there's a myth. And some vampires are like, screw that. I'm just going to do my vampire thing over here. And the werewolves are all hippies.
Yeah. That sounds about right.
Except for the computer werewolf, who's not a hippie.
Yes.
But all the rest of them are hippies, and they can do werewolf shit. And
because so it was more... Darkness was more about...
Playing the game
and not there and
because
not there.
If you start putting all
their meta plot
at that point, the game is just there's no point.
Right.
There's really no point.
At any rate,
there's no point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know,
it's like Call of Cthulhu at that point.
And we all got started on this because Jeremy brought his copy of Numenera to show to Noah. Numenera is by Monty Cook, who did Monty Cook's World of Darkness,
which I found enjoyable, but I can see why people wouldn't like it.
And my comment was that I do like about 50% of Monty Cook's stuff. Third edition D&D.
Oh yeah. Then we got on a tangent to talking about Ghostwalk.
No, we're not talking about Ghostwalk.
Standing around.
Monty Cook is awesome. Ghostwalk was not, sadly, not awesome.
The child appears and disintegrates because their parents are not there. You know how depressed I was reading that book? I was like, I don't want to do anything.
Jeremy, puppies.
No, the puppies appear and they die. They die a second time.
Yeah.
As they're annihilated because their parents aren't there. And the gods, they're across the ocean.
Yes, they are.
That's why.
And you just stand in a line.
You stand in a line. And it
until you get made into something.
Someone comes over and stabs you, and you're like, I'm already dead. I just watch those puppies cease to exist in front of me.
It would have sounded to me like, it's all circular, World of Darkness stuff, but the Wraith of Oblivion, how it talked about basically is you stood in a line and then you were made into a pencil or something. And then you were always a pencil. And you only remember ever being a pencil, the Soul Forge thing, and it's like, and then you're a Wraith who goes and is emo on Earth or something. Obviously
paraphrasing
Wraith of Oblivion, but yeah, it was
basically the only way to like survive and not go insane in Ghostwalk is become a lich.
Yeah.
At any rate, we do like Tolis.
We do like Tolis. Tolis is awesome.
Yeah. I'm physically working on getting Tolis into Realmworks, which I can talk about now. I can talk about this.
I want a copy of Funny Cook's World of Darkness again.
You might have some.
I think I have a PDF for her.
I'm actively getting Tolis into Realmworks, and Realmworks is actually turning out to be really cool, because it turns out, remember you and I were having the discussion about the other day about Hero Lab integration?
Uh-huh.
It actually is integrated now.
Oh, nice.
I didn't realize this. If you
I've downloaded the new beta, and I've installed it, but I haven't had a chance to play around.
If you link a portfolio into Realmworks, and you click on that link as you're using it, mm-hmm, it'll pop up, not necessarily a full thing, but it pops up a full stat block.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it pops up a usable stat block right away.
What would be nice is if it actually would parse data from that portfolio.
Well, again, they're working on that, and mm-hmm, they're getting there, but...
You're like, okay, well, here's this NPC who I have statted out and everything in Hero Lab, and now I've linked into here, and what I would like to see happen is... all that information is automatically parsed into Realmworks. It's got his background stuff that had his background section on the Hero Lab thing. It's now right here in text form. It's
well, Realmworks. I'm not exactly sure. They might be getting there. And that's something, too, since you are in the beta, you can always suggest that as a feature.
Mm-hmm.
I think they added something to Army Builder, too. I think it was Battletech.
They added Battletech. Actually, I was just looking at the release on my way home on my phone. Yes, BattleTech was just added by Catalyst Labs. It is a free
thing.
Well, because Army Builder once now.
Yeah,
right.
Instead of yearly. Yeah.
Army Builder is really nice for Warhammer.
Because I had it, but my yearly license expired like 4 years ago.
They're moving it to, I believe, more of a Hero Lab style, where you can buy different systems.
Yeah,
that's fine. All I used it for was Warhammer.
Yeah, BattleTech. Yeah, that's nice. They have BattleTech.
They just added BattleTech. They're working.
That was something nice.
They just released a couple. I mean, they're taking basically every official Savage World setting, and they're putting all those into there for free if you have the Savage World space, because they just added Weird Wars Rome.
Sweet.
And
there's a bunch of Savage Worlds or Hero Lab in there.
Like, that's what I'm talking about.
You have to know where to look for them, because they're not on the
you have to go on the
update list.
Right, you have to go on the update
list. Deadlands Noir is in there. Their Deadlands one, the regular Deadlands one, is actually my original user file that I posted online, and they've updated.
Yeah.
So actually the one that I put together way back when for Enough Room to Die. So a little trivia there for you people using Hero Lab.
And then they've added Deadlands, they've added your Deadlands, Deadlands Noir, they've added Space 1889, Red Sands, they added just about every...
I think 50 Fathoms is in there now.
50 Fathoms is in there.
It's a bunch of stuff. That's user user submitted,
right.
User created.
But
fans will do this for free because they're running those games and they love it. Okay.
Yeah, but they do go over them, make sure they're
fighting
well.
They take the bugs out.
Right, and like I said, they just added Slipstream, which played it once or twice. And I like the setting.
It's very much the pulp.
Very pulp. Very pulp.
Very incredibly, incredibly pulp. Yeah, I like Slipstream, what we played of it.
Never mind. So RealmWorks is coming, Hero Lab's working.
We were conversing about Paladin, how they should act.
Yes.
Oh.
Well,
okay, here's my question for you guys.
You don't have to raise your hand.
Well, I gesticulate.
Gesticulating all over the table, and that's
really
gross. That's, come on, get a towel.
Do you guys ever think that Paladins should not have to be restricted to lawful good?
Hey, it's like a conversation we had in a while.
Interesting, and a recording.
How about me? Because I wasn't here for that. I've always had a thing about Paladins. If they're like clerics, if they're worshiping a certain god.
Here was our conversation. Basically, Paladins should have oaths.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
And also, a Paladin could turn around. Like, okay, so we have Joe. Joe worships the god Smo.
You can do a lot of interesting things with a Paladin.
Yeah. And the Paladin, Mr. Paladin, realizes that Joe and Smo, his god, is at war with Joe. Joe's not an evil guy. Smo's not an evil god.
But his god is at war.
But they're at war. He should be able to... He can go over there and smite him currently. Now, though, if they're not at war, but Joe does something that our Paladin finds against his oath, and he decides that he's going to end Joe's life, he could still go over there and do that. But the smite's not going to necessarily
work. The god. He doesn't have the godly back.
Now, let's say Joe's also a Paladin. So they're having a little Paladin spat.
Mm-hmm.
And then a demon walks along. They could both smite the demon.
Mm-hmm.
Because the demon, in most cases, is evil. He's a supernatural evil.
Okay.
Unless, for some reason, in your world, it happens to be that Paladin's angels happen to be demons for some random reason.
No, okay. And that's more my direction.
What I was talking to Jeremy about was I love Paladin. Paladin is one of my favorite classes. They absolutely are. They're fun. They're the holy warrior class. But
what I was sort of getting at is, say you have the paladin in the book is pretty much your paladin of Paylor.
Right. I mean, that's the standard, isn't it, like these days?
Yeah.
Paylor?
Totally. If you have a paladin of Paylor, then you have, then you have lay on hands, you know, smite evil, all that good stuff. But there's absolutely no reason why saying, hey, I'm a paladin, but I'm a paladin of Eurythmol. Why do I have smite evil? Why do I have
That's why, like, Pathfinder actually added, like, the anti-paladin, but I still wasn't that happy with it.
Well, and I think adding another class is just entirely wrong with
it. It's actually technically it's not a class. It's technically, really, what they should have.
They need to make paladins, the paladin basically more like the cleric, and that the clerics have their domains and all that stuff. The paladins need to choose a package. They have the raffle, good, raffle evil, raffle neutral, whatever.
Stay away from alignment and have oaths.
Right.
That's what 5th edition is doing. They are doing oaths, and I really like the oaths.
I haven't even seen. I haven't looked at the 5th edition in a while.
That's fine.
Have you looked at the Advanced Player Guide for Pathfinder at all?
Not much.
Okay. You guys were probably both like this then. The Inquisitor. It is basically a lot of what you're talking about. It's oaths and it's the divine. It's got divine spells, divine warrior abilities, mm-hmm. but it's not quite a paladin. And it's like a combination like witch hunter kind of.
But you can take this a little bit farther and say clerics too follow kind of the same guidelines, where a cleric who is so-called good and another cleric who's so-called good but worship different deities one day could be punching each other out because there was a spat between their gods. Or they may not be able to heal someone in the party just that day because that other party member said something that their god doesn't like.
Now, a lot of that is sounds like GM fiat.
Yes, and part of that's world setting stuff too,
right? And but that's what I'm saying a lot of that sounds like something the GM keeps trying.
But with the paladin, unfortunately, it's actually built to be lawful good, which is
and I understand. Inquisitor is a step in that right direction, but the Inquisitor isn't this holy word. It's like holy investigator type.
Right,
you're doing the Solomon Cain.
That's why like I've always. When I usually run games, if people want to play paladins, I will tell them, you can play paladin, you can play a non-lawful good paladin. I think it really depends on the god you want to follow in game. And that's fine.
They have to have an oath to follow, though. They have to have something that they follow.
That's rules, basically. You know,
they will not break.
I just think that it's a missed opportunity for Pathfinder, for Dungeons & Dragons, where they have this paladin they automatically assume. Right. Paladin is this holy warrior of good. Well, you know, we're talking about, historically speaking, you know, you're thinking of these as knights in shining armor. Well, you know, the Crusades, the Church said, okay, these guys over in Jerusalem are evil people, you have to go kill them.
Right.
And so they did.
So we took it a little bit farther, and we said, well, you can have a fun game where the paladin has been told by their god that the church.
You have the god, whatever, over here, who is doing their thing, then you have the church who interprets what the god has decreed and is writing in the Holy Bible, whatever that they have. But what happens if that god goes, wait a minute, that you're doing stuff that I don't want you to do, you're interpreting my words in a stupid way.
The only one that sees that is this.
Paladin
of the Church have it. Their powers.
Yeah.
That paladin has his powers. people in the middle are confused, mm-hmm. still probably go with the church. Think about how a game like that would go. That would be fun.
When you have this parent who knows he's right,
or he's insane,
or he's whatnot, but you have the church
lambasting
him, saying, well, this guy's obviously in league with demons, he's going against scripture, all that stuff. But he's like, I'm getting words directly from my God. And they're like, we interpret the word from our God. We tell you what he says.
And it's not like the church is going out doing...
Who are people going to believe? They're going to believe the church. They're like, well, this guy's saying stuff that completely turns our life over, our religious views on, so that can't be right. So we're going to burn him at the stake.
Right, yeah. And so it's kind of like they have to build up slowly. It's not, you would almost build it where the church is still doing good things.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not, there's something different there.
I mean, it's looking very much into, you know, the Church of England type mentality of saying, well, we're going to create our own church with blackjack and hookers.
And what can we arguably say of
what religions are now saying, well, you know, 2,000 years have passed since this religion has been put in place. And this is, of course, assuming that your God doesn't appear on a daily basis to the masses, saying, hi, I am Palor, and I will shine love and all this upon you. Do clerics, do paladins then, it depends on how you want to go. Going this route, I'd say paladins get their power directly from divine source, directly from their God.
And
clerics get their power from the church, from their faith in what they believe.
In the God itself.
It's like, I believe in this domain, I believe in this scripture that... I believe in this scripture. I believe in this so much that I can, you know, heal. I can do this. I can do this. It's that power of faith, and that's what clerics are. But
flip it.
Paladins. You know, you can say that paladins are the power in truth. The power of truth. You know, I think you can do some really fun and interesting things.
I would actually personally, I might actually take that the opposite route, where I would have the paladins being the ones who are being told by the church. Mm-hmm. This is where you have to go. You are a warrior of the church. You go this way. And then you've got the cleric, the priest, who is the one praying to directly to God, and he's the one who gets that blessing and
where you can have different
but it's still funny to have that paladin who's like, wait guys, I think this is wrong.
Maybe we shouldn't be killing these babies.
You're obviously a heretic, and you know, yeah, we're gonna have to murder you now. I mean, stab you. I mean, murder. I mean, what are we gonna do?
Oh yeah, murder him.
Go back here.
In righteousness. Why are you running away?
Righteously.
That's not very paladin-like. So that's not part of our oath. We can run away.
It's not part of our treaty pen. It is now. I have received. I mean, you can have a lot of fun with that. I think, especially if you're doing a religious oriented campaign or anything like that. I think it's a
paladin orders duking it out.
But it's always been a problem of mine. Just reading like D&D in general, these paladins. It's like, well, they're awful good. But
why?
It's like my cleric, I can choose a god I follow. I get all this stuff.
Paladin
assumes that you're a paladin. You get all this stuff. Just
no, I do understand. I do understand the lawful part.
Yes.
Like, I would take it so far as to say they need to be lawful. Even if the god's not, they would need to be lawful because they
have to adhere to the rules of the deity.
Right.
But, and then they need to set forth those rules. As a GM, you need to say, okay, well, I have this god. He's the god. You're not the god of slaughter. His rules are that. And you need to have a template or some sort of guideline for that. And you know, because a paladin of some lawful good deity is not going to act the same in a situation as a paladin of a chaotic evil deity.
But at least with...
I agree with you on the lawful stuff.
Most good deities, you can leave their powers mostly the same.
Yeah.
Even with most neutral-esque deities that lean more towards the good side, you can leave their powers mostly the same. It's if you start going more the evil routes. And yeah, there's class classes that kind of, but you may want to feel domain.
I think what we're saying is you don't need to have a separate class for that.
Well, exactly.
It all should be built in the power of class.
Or you can, and we'll or you choose
again. You can GM fiat that. I mean, mm-hmm. you can definitely house rule that pretty.
Yeah, I think laying on hands when your god is like, unless it only works on you for certain deities, because lay on hands is useful in a selfish sort of way. But that's also where
a lot of, like, again, going back to Pathfinder, if you read through a lot of their sub books and Ultimate Magic and Ultimate Combat and stuff, there are actually a lot of setups now that remove the lay on hands power in exchange for other things.
Mm-hmm.
That's
good that they have things that can remove it.
Right.
But just take a basic class. Get rid of all those extra books. You take a basic class. Unfortunately, how they've built them over the years.
Well, this would be something that you should push forward for Pathfinder 2.0.
Which they're publishing next week, or?
No, I'm just saying that, it's something that they might. The Paizo people are open enough to ideas that, they could definitely.
I'm just going to wait for the 5th edition one to come out.
That's fine.
And just see what the oaths, because I liked what the oaths say, mm-hmm. and building those seem to make more sense,
mm-hmm.
for me.
That's fine.
But we were also talking about that. Let's go into that conversation. We're talking about how really nothing wrong with 3.5 or 3rd edition.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with 4th edition either. It's just a different.
Yeah, I wasn't saying that.
Everyone has their edition that they like.
No, I was just saying.
And you can play any of them now.
My only thing, this was my personal. My personal thing. No. I really liked it. I didn't like how the numbers kept growing.
True.
Numbers in what way? Well,
which numbers?
All of the numbers.
3.5.
The numbers always get bigger. Your character always keeps going.
Oh, you're saying as opposed to, like, having things backslide?
There is nothing maxed out. Meaning...
There's no limit.
There is no limit. It does not stop. You can keep going. Virtually, if you wanted to, forever. And ever. And ever.
Well, what... Which are you talking about? Skilled, or are you you're just talking about everything in general? Or
you take a d20,
mm-hmm.
and you add a modifier.
Yeah.
That modifier, you will keep adding to that. As you level up, that will keep growing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Infinitely.
What cap would you want to see on that?
A cap.
Based upon
something. Because it weirds me out, and it also gets ridiculous. It's like, you can have a powerful character, but you don't need to be adding plus 50 for some mortal character. It's like, plus whatever to that. At some point, it just needs to be like, here you go. These are the limits. This is this is where it stops.
But I like adding 50. It's fun.
But you can imagine.
You understand that's how players. That's how a lot of players are. It's like, dude, I have a plus 50 in this.
It never stops.
Yeah, and
forever.
But that's where going into it, though. I mean, you're what level are you at that point? Are you playing a game? Or are you going up to 30th, 40th level?
No, right. Well, but that's the point. I mean, the system is open ended, certainly. But again, that's why should it not be open ended? I will pose that to you. Why should it not be open ended?
I don't know. Because it bothers the hell out of me.
Okay.
Well,
there's that.
Okay.
And then the other irritation, and this actually is a 4th edition irritation. Remember, I like 4th edition.
Mm-hmm.
I also like 3rd edition and 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about this.
And you're going to like Pathfinder, I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah. I'll enjoy Pathfinder. Then. Yeah, it's still fine. If you have a goblin in this town... And your first level,
mm-hmm.
okay, goblin's first level goblin. Now, we're just basic, we're going basic without the GM thinking about this. He's just running them as they stand in the books.
All right.
when you leave and gain 10 levels, when you come back, that goblin is a 10th level goblin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Basing it on the actual just encounter levels. A party versus this particular level of critter. Okay. The monsters always have a number that are leveling up with them.
Well, they've got their challenge rating, their CR.
No. You're saying this is what you want?
No.
I'm saying this is the most annoying thing in the world. Because
you
go to this spot, it is not realistic for me to fight a 10th level goblin because I am 10th level.
What? Oh, you're saying that
unless he levels up in some logical way, just because I'm 10th level in that same exact spot, why is he calculated based on my level? We are not actually. We are not.
But a lot of times you're not. A lot of times that goblin would still be level one, but you just. The way the encounter builder instructions go on a lot of these systems is to provide an adequate challenge
for fourth ed.
For fourth ed,
it has been so long.
Fourth ed. Fourth ed. Yeah. No. Fourth ed. You still add. You add the CRs, so you have your level one goblin, or you've got a CR one. You've got a CR one goblin. You need a CR 10. You take 10 CR one goblins. That's a CR 10. If I remember, goblins in fourth edition are actually like CR one quarter or something. So it'll be actually like 40 goblins. But that 40
combat would never end.
Well, no, that's the point, is that the combat in 4th edition, that combat would end very quickly.
Basically, you never get any better. The monsters are leveling up with you.
For some reason, I really don't agree with that, but okay. I feel there's something wrong there.
And are you saying like just module wise or
pre-printed module?
No, just number wise. Number wise.
If you look in the monster manual, a goblin is a CR one quarter.
If you look at 10th level, okay.
Okay. All right, keep going. I'm going to try and follow here.
My point is, I hated the whole 4th edition encounter building because all it felt like was all we were doing was playing the same types. We were always first level.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what level character.
Okay, so what you're saying is that the encounters from first level through 10th level, they never felt like you were getting stronger. Is that what you're trying
exactly.
to say?
There is some sort of math in there, which I cannot explain.
I think where our disconnect was is saying that you have, as you pass by this keep and it has a level one goblin guarding it.
That's a bad explanation.
Later on, you come back, there's no reason that goblin's a level 10. It should just still be a level one.
Right.
That's a GM thing. That's a run of the game thing. I'm just trying to verbalize saying like you have a 10th level character. He acts just the same as a first level character. He just has more hit points. He has a few different powers, but like he hasn't scaled up in any way.
There is no scale.
Yeah, he has some stuff that does new damage and new things like that. But there was no
okay.
You didn't feel. You missed rolling the 10d6 fireball.
It was just, and that was the thing. It just felt like we were on the same thing.
Let me ask you what. Was it the thing like not having a 10d6 fireball?
I have no idea.
I'm curious.
No, I truly have no idea. I just know, especially as a GM, even when I put different. I would build characters that were different. Like, I would try to put that first level, that would make sense. Like, you're moving around the country and try to be like, hey, this guy makes sense for this area. But for some random reason, how they're built.
I mean, I don't know
how
I mean,
the encounters are built in 4th Ed. It's so computer gamey, and I don't
that. Well, I mean,
and I hate being that person to say that because I don't think it's a computer game.
It's not. But the math and the design, you can deny it. But if you look at 4th edition, there is quite obvious influence from things like World of Warcraft and MMOs and online.
Oh, yeah. We've explained that before, right?
That's
easy to explain.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Annoyed the hell out of me.
I have to give props to 4th edition. I was able to draw. When I was in New Jersey, I drew a large number of new gamers into tabletop gaming with 4th edition because it was so accessible.
That's the way it was designed.
Yeah, exactly.
In a way, encounter building in 4th ed was a heck of a lot easier than it was in 3rd ed.
I will give it that. It was
especially for new GMs.
For new GMs, yes.
Who actually were born out of the 3.0, 3.5, it was a real big, change.
Let me tell you, I'm not the greatest encounter builder. I'm actually, my encounter building is kind of sucky. And it wasn't until 4th edition and then Pathfinder that I really kind of got encounter building, because the encounter building rules, if you read them in 3 and 3.5, they're very confusing. Pathfinder,
they had a calculator for it, and it was ridiculous.
Right.
It was dumb.
Pathfinder has your characters are this level. You want your encounter to be challenging, you have this many experience points to spend on the thing. Add up the monsters so that their experience points match this, which was very similar to 4th edition, where it was your characters are level 10, you add up the monsters' CRs, and they should be level 10. So if you want a CR, you want to throw a goblin horde at them, goblins are CR 1/3, CR 1/4, whatever it was, you throw 30 or 40 goblins, that is a CR 10 encounter. Yes and no, because that was, a 40 goblin horde, would take forever and was a little challenging, but
I had the Lemure swarm, remember? It's not demons. I had 1,000 of them in a swarm. This was like epic level. Yeah, okay. But yeah. It was probably one of the best creatures in the whole place.
And that goes back to that maxim, the number that keeps going.
Right.
Yeah. I really think you can build an epic game without the number keeping going.
There's a certain point where
I'm looking at a Final Fantasy game.
Sure. Yeah.
There it is.
Huh?
You just said it.
I'm looking at Final Fantasy game. Why do I have 5,000 hit points?
He just said it.
Well, but that's the point. I mean that's
no. It's not always the point.
I say it a lot.
But you just said the first part, and you said the second part. It is not.
No. What I'm saying is my point is that you're right. You don't need those numbers, but when you're doing that kind of epic level gaming, you can almost get into the kind of thing that he hates, where you run into that player control that you want the fate, fate system is great for things like epic.
Fate system is not great for anything.
That's why you can do
this. Has been established.
I do believe you can run an epic level game, and you don't have to have so much just pluses on everything.
Well, for that plus
Savage Worlds, plus 5,
play Savage Worlds.
But I don't want to all the time.
That's true.
It's true.
Well, Savage Worlds lends itself more to a certain type of fantasy game, whereas D&D is entirely
other. Savage Worlds is only epic until you take a couple shots.
Yeah. So it's like, put two hands.
And I'm not talking like,
That's fine.
I think I totally coughed in somebody's ear.
That's the loop. Anyway,
wouldn't be the first time.
But I think it's just different gaming type things. And I still like 3.5.
No,
I have nothing against it. And 4th edition, I will play 4th edition nonstop. I probably will never GM 4th edition ever again. For some random reason, I had the exact opposite of everybody else. I was like, I hate GMing it.
Be like, Clay.
I hate GMing it.
Okay.
I was just like, this is supposed to be easy. This is the dumbest thing ever. This is taking me too long. I'm going to go back to my second edition, but ooh, Osric.
Yeah.
Hey.
And then you get to hear me bitch about Paco.
No. There's so many other ways you can just flip it around. Because you break down Paco and it turns out to be pluses and stuff.
Yeah.
The real cyclopedia. No. Something. The fighting styles in that book. Awesome! I forgot about that.
Which one?
What? World Cyclopedia. It's basic. The basic. It's all like.
It was put out in the early 90s, okay. It was a D&D book. It was called Rules Cyclopedia.
I'll write it next time. Okay.
Yeah.
Basically,
it was a collection of.
It was the basic, advanced, or not advanced, basic, master level, immortal. There's one other one. It's all of those put together.
Yeah. And it had a collection and revised and edited and stuff like that.
It was before advanced D&D.
Okay.
It was meant to be a central.
You have to remember. Okay, just as a reminder, my first D&D was Black Book. A D&D Black Book.
Right. This one gives you...
Third ed right here.
This one, basically, with one book, you can run everything. It has everything you need. GM rules, player rules, monsters. It has Dominion rules.
This came out just before those Black Books, I think.
Right. You can run like a kingdom. It gives you rules for different fighter styles, so your fighter was not simple. Like, they go, but people would say, oh, your fighter's something. Screw that. No. Mm-hmm. You could do awesome things with fighters. We had fighters doing all sorts of stuff. This was the time, though, when an elf was an elf.
Well, an elf was a class, not a...
Which was actually kind of cool in some ways, because he was a fighter mage. This was the first fighter mage.
Right.
A dwarf was a dwarf.
Yes.
There was some dumb things, like... They could only go up to certain levels. But that was a control thing, too. And mages were controlled, though they did have more powers.
Yeah, I mean, second edition inherently was schizophrenic, so...
Right. Well, that was because no one knew what the actual rules were.
Psionics? Yes. Oh, God, don't even...
But some people love psionics.
Well, they never introduced psionic rules that actually make sense. I'm saying that right.
I will... You're going to hate me. I will argue that fourth edition psionics actually worked.
They actually did. I will have to say they did, and the reason they did
because they worked
magic.
They worked everything else.
And everything else they tried to make it something that it wasn't magic, and it just didn't work. It was so broken.
Mean about that.
Seconded science were ridiculous.
To create things that kill people at like a distance, mm-hmm. and it.
Oh yeah, psionics in second edition were broke,
but it was
and now it's a broken one in third ed.
Oh yeah, totally just ripped.
I'm gonna this mountain of gold.
Yeah,
just cause. And that's how you destroyed economies.
Well, you know, economies need to be destroyed occasionally.
There's no golden rule,
but to be fair, there does reach a point where, in an epic level, some of that is okay. Like, especially if it's kind of out of character, or not out of character, but kind of the standby stuff, you're just like, and that's why I still think you can do epic level games without some of the stuff. And that's why I'm kind of doing my own little player book as 5th edition stuff comes out. And as I look at my 2nd edition stuff, and as I look at 3rd edition stuff, and as I look at 4th edition stuff, and I'm really putting a difference between this is mortal level and this is god level.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning mortals get to level 20. That's mortals. Yes.
And then you hit you basically hit demigod.
Mortals get to level 20,
mm-hmm.
and then that's probably the end.
Mm-hmm. Look, if you're honestly, if your campaign lasts past level 20, oh, God,
if you're, I would love a game that lasted that long. If your game,
ours went to 25.
It did, and that was awesome.
The most
from first level to 25th level.
Oh, I love high level gaming.
I have never
actually
the Wizards College game is the highest level I have ever played.
That's because we're not trying hard enough. Well,
I'll actually run another D&D game.
Speaking of trying
level games,
I did pick up a core book of it.
I saw that. I love first level. I don't like starting at third.
Yeah.
I like starting at first.
That's a Dark Zone thing.
It's just, you need to start at the beginning. Okay. Because I'm OCD.
So you're saying I shouldn't start the Pathfinder game at fifth level?
You do whatever you want.
Well,
I'm not going to hate you. I might not hate you. I'm not going to hate you.
No, that's just...
I actually am going to give my players, when I run my next D&D game, to start at level zero.
Oh, no.
No, I've created this little...
Is there a survivability?
Yeah.
Because you have... I don't want to play Dungeon... Like, I enjoy Dungeon Crawl Classics, but if I'm going to play...
We are playing that again. Dungeon Crawl Classics. Right.
I will play Dungeon Crawl Classics for the humor element of playing Dungeon Crawl Classics. Yeah. If I'm going to play a campaign...
No, I'm modifying those.
Okay, that's fine. But I don't want to start off with three character sheets and then hoping
one character.
Okay.
But zero level, and I also am modifying the experience points down to, from thousands and thousands, it's down to 10 gets you to level 1, 20 gets you to level 2. So on and so on. Because that is something you take from Thunder Call Classic. Encounters give you a lot less experience.
But that's just, I don't know. That's one of those things that's like, yeah, encounters take less experience points. It doesn't matter if it's 10,000 experience points or 10 experience points. Realistically, it's still going to take you the same amount of time to level up.
But it's less things to track.
I will not argue that.
Yes, that's the thing. It's less things to track, and I have reached a point where, unless it's gold and money on my character sheet, I don't care about tracking lots of experience points. Money's different. One thing that always annoys me, except unless the game is built that way, is not tracking money.
And or not having a lot of treasure.
Not tracking money. I will track money.
You like that or you hate that?
No, I love tracking money. That's why I love Gork.
Okay.
Gork was greedy, but he gave it back.
Right. Robin Hood.
No, he gave it to the party. Screw the poor party.
Oh, okay.
He just wanted to make sure he had it.
Oh, he wanted to hold it and then give it out to
Then he would give it out to those people that deserved it.
So, a lot of the treasure ended up with him,
mostly because he would take it.
Not thievery, no.
I'm holding on to this. No.
He would just be holding on to this.
Yes. And there were some people in the party who were offended by this, but then,
learn better.
Anyway.
Then bad things happen to them.
Some of us are no longer dating that person.
Then bad things happen to them.
Yeah.
So... But it's a fun game.
For your information, also, by the way, when I do run that Pathfinder game, it's going to be Liz's first game too. Like she's never. So we're going to get to Pathfinder Barbarians.
Pathfinder Barbarians are awesome, but Pathfinder actually has three levels of XP. Well,
that's nice.
If you want to have fast advancement, medium advancement, or slow advancement, it gets to ridiculous numbers. But
and I mean, I know why they do that.
Yeah.
But it also does scale.
But it is nice. It's nice to be able to.
I played a Pathfinder Barbarian.
In like a demo or something?
No, at CanCon.
Right.
He's a halfling.
Oh, yeah. Muppets.
No, not
Muppets. It was an actual.
I was going to
say, halfling. And somebody ran one. It was a couple years ago.
Cool.
I think it was either with Panky or somebody. We use a lot of doors.
Oh, that was Andre.
No, it wasn't Andre.
No?
I was told I can't use doors again.
Wait, you used your doors off of hinges and hit people with them?
No, I used it for traps.
You took those off of hinges and you should
pull awesome.
The door off and you use them for traps.
Oh. Hit traps? Traps that shoot at you?
If you're strong enough,
it doesn't matter.
If the door gets broke, you get another one.
One thing a dungeon has is plenty of doors.
Yes, and if not, you bring them.
Barbarians thinking green, you know.
Eco-minded barbarian. Yeah.
Actually, the temple of
sustainability.
Was it temple of no? It wasn't the big game, but it was.
No, because that was.
Yeah, that was the.
That was Osrent or whatever.
But it was Tracy ran. One of them. All I know is that we used a lot of doors. And it was
hot. Yeah, I do remember. I think Tracy did run. He ran a Tomb of Horrors.
Pathfinder one.
He ran a Tomb of Horrors under Pathfinder's first year.
He did. That's what it was.
It was Tomb of Horrors Pathfinder?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was hilarious because we also had hero tokens.
Mm-hmm.
And
Bennies.
Bennies. Mm-hmm. Which I think should be in every game pretty much.
Oh, yeah.
I need to sit down and read through a lot of my Pathfinder books and decide all the crap I decide, the side rules I'm actually going to use.
Uh-oh. See, you read rules.
I decide to, you know, whatever.
I rely on others to tell me the rules. And then I, even as a GM, wait,
now,
my secret, it's out.
I just remember back in the day, for, you know, second edition and all that crap.
Anyway.
It was like, yeah, pretty much. Just going through all that.
That's
like,
not the right way to play.
No, there was no right way. There was house rules everywhere.
And anybody, second ed?
Yeah. And anybody would say that was the right way, we'd be like, well, my right way is this. You can leave.
Your right way is wrong.
Now, you pick up all those dice and you roll them, and we're going to blow this F up.
No, I'm excited to get into to run Pathfinder for everybody. It's going to be fun, especially running Pathfinder and or Tolus and Pathfinder and mm-hmm. the city and the city and the urban. And,
mm-hmm. and I lament that I really wish there was a good conversion out there for Arcana Evolved into Pathfinder.
Yeah. I need to look that up.
I absolutely love Arcana Evolved.
I can't imagine. I can't imagine it would be that hard.
It would be hard to be the magic system in it. I loved the magic system in it. It was still 3.5, but they added some great flair to it. And the not as much as Iron Heroes did, but
you know, it's one of the things I love about Pathfinder and 3.5 that I felt so lacking in 4th edition. And I've probably said this before, and I'm going to say it again. Was the non-combat spells. All those side spells you had to do stuff on the role-playing side of things.
That's what's lacking in a lot of games, it seems, and that's something that a lot of old school...
I mean, but they have the rituals in 4th edition, and it just
was
insane. It took too long to execute.
Well, yeah.
That's old school games,
mm-hmm.
old school D&D had those, and I'm not saying old school was better.
Well,
not
what I'm saying. You know, it's that
they
whole
had those,
keeping track of non-combat spells.
Right.
Is silly.
I mean,
like, but if you could make them utility powers,
well, and here's again something that I'm going to keep going back to Pathfinder because right now it's my Pathfinder is currently my favorite D&D. Pathfinder takes level 0 spells and says, you have as many of these as you like.
You
get to know so many of them, and you get as many uses of them as you like.
Yeah, I think it's 0 levels. I mean, the way Andre does it, level spells is...
Well, that was the way he did when you guys were running Wizards College in 3rd edition, mm-hmm. you had as many 0 level spells as you wanted in his way. But the way Pathfinder does it, and correct me if I'm wrong, you can check this, but if I remember correctly, Wizards and Sorcerers just have cantrips. They're 0 level spells, however many of them you know, you can cast them as many times as smurfing times, sorry, as you like in a day. And they're not the greatest powers on the planet, but they're useful.
You also have to have the higher level buttons.
You do. And
you can pull those from 3.5 anyway.
Right. But the way I'm trying to decide how I want to, as I'm talking this out to you guys, it's making me think about, you know, how do I want to run my magic when I run the game? And, you know, do you consider that? Do I go through, look at a lot of spells and rate them as high power expenditure and not high power expenditure? Tongues, I cannot see a reason that you have necessarily a number of casts per day on.
It's a simple solution. If you want tongues to be widespread,
right,
then it is a ritual. But it's something that you can pick up in a medallion,
right,
that they can buy, mm-hmm, and you put a price that's affordable. It's something that people can buy as starting equipment.
Right.
Or, and this is something that I enjoy, make it part of, you come up with starting equipment blocks.
Mm-hmm.
Because one thing that's kind of irritating is going and buying your different, mm-hmm, equipment, but a tongues amulet. The nice thing about tongues amulet is it's useful, but it can be stolen.
Right.
If you make it a spell that can be used so many times,
right,
that gets a little bit overpowered. But the amulet, it's like a the translator, like in Star Trek.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They take that away from them, they're screwed. With the amulet, if you're captured, guess what? Take away your amulet.
That's actually pretty fair.
It makes it amusing.
And the great thing about the game that I'm going to be running with it being like you guys are the adventurers SWAT team.
Mm-hmm.
Is I can give you guys equipment like that and let you guys have that, but then
the special response unit.
Right. That's basically what it is. It's going to be the adventurer. Like, you guys are adventurers in town, and you're part of the Delvers Guild and everything. But the Delvers have put together a special response unit to help the city guard.
I've done this before. You overcomplicate yourself with going through the spells and going, right, okay, this is higher. I would seriously think
just
about higher
this
magic,
mm-hmm,
meaning there's probably a business that does this,
mm-hmm,
and I'm not saying just
and in total right sense, yeah.
But you can make them fairly cheap.
Mm-hmm.
The reason this one is,
it's like that one wizard that makes all those capes of the mountain,
right?
He just keeps making them.
He makes capes, right,
but like it could be anything.
It was a glitch in the first fourth ed character builder that whenever you made a character and gave him a random magic item, he would always have a cape of the mountain on.
Yeah.
Always, without fail. And so we determined that I think Eric or something, someone rolled up 8 random characters using their randomized thing.
I always
have. Everyone had capes and metamarks. So we just determined some wizard out there decided he was just going to churn these things out to the point where everybody had one, and people were like using them as dish rags.
But really, all you have to do is come up with an equipment list that says tongues amulet. Whatever ring, blah blah blah. Also, if you do things like that, it uses up a magic item spot.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to decide what are they going to use. It can be taken away. Now you don't make them super expensive, if depending on society. And then you hand your players that list,
right?
Or you build your little.
Well, I mean, what it'll probably be for this game, because that's a brilliant idea. Is I come up with an equipment list that is your uniform for the unit,
and that's fine too.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is, if you already have prices,
oh, yeah,
replacement. But if you go through all those spells and try to be like,
no, I understand what you're saying.
That's gonna be way. But just make them some minor magical items. Yeah, that means, or police versus minor.
Right.
It will make your life so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's fun.
Yeah,
it really makes those types of magical items are great, especially like the camping stuff. I love the camping stuff for adventures. I know we're in town, so we're not. But I mean, like,
the rest of the world is on fire.
Yeah, but that's why Tolis is so much fun, because I can basically, you know, say, okay, yeah, a kid wandered into the depths
wandered into this basement, and there happens to be and this wall collapsed, and guess what was on the other side? Yeah, guess where you got to go.
But in a steampunk society, a thing like those immovable ladders or immovable rods,
mm-hmm,
those are going to be really useful for things. Mm-hmm. I mean, extendable ladders.
I remember when you had me make a I had a character in a game of yours, Richter.
Yeah.
So a dwarven barbarian. And you had me level him up to a point and have him like he runs around this floating castle or something, and I determined instead of having a dedicated water source or something, I just bought those decanters of water and just upended some of them. It's like, and this is where my people get their water.
Yeah,
because it was cheap.
A floating castle occasionally.
And it worked. It's like a lot of water source. But hey, there we go.
There's one of those character things I thought was amusing, so I was like, I want him in my world.
Yes, he had.
He has a succubus as a mate, and he has a ring that protects him from her.
And he had this is bad. It's a third ed. Third ed, and he was a barbarian.
He's a complete dick.
He's a complete jerk, and he used two great axes, which he had monkey grips. It just rained death on things in here. It was like, oh crap.
So yeah,
he was a jerk.
I was just like, make him level whatever. Give him a castle. Here's
and a succubus follower.
And a succubus follower. Whatever.
And I was like, okay. Done. Yeah, that was entertaining.
Yeah.
I went to try to design just a level 20 character. I got so
daunting. It's easier to start at level 1 and go than it is to start at level 20.
And I will say there's...
And HeroLab makes it easier, but it's still a pain.
Oh, yeah.
Because then you got to go through those magic items, and it's like, I don't know what 90%, 92% of these things do, and I'm not going to read
that. I will say that as much as I love HeroLab... Once you get enough of the add-ons for one system, it's like, okay, I need to go through feats. Oh, sweet.
Welcome. I made spreadsheets of feats back in the day, and that was third ed, and I had to reference which book they were from because they were so many. And it was, all right, you have a selection at this level. You have 200 feats to choose from. And that was not fun.
I believe the amount in my Pathfinder Hero Lab, which I've installed Core, the first two Bestiaries, the Advanced Player's Guide, Ultimate Magic, and Ultimate Combat. I'll tell you, that's not a cheap setup.
Nope. they get you on those add-ons.
Yeah, I think there's 177 possible feats in that list.
Yeah.
I do want to pick up the campaign. Oh, I should totally pick that up this weekend. Campaign Builder's Guide and the
Ultimate Campaign.
That one's
awesome.
Yeah, and I also
PDF.
I also want the NPC Codex.
Yeah, actually,
that looks like a book that I will definitely
be less interested in that.
Yeah,
I have never found any use for pre-generated NPCs. Never.
Except
in Mutants and Masterminds, but the only never anywhere else.
I usually have more interest in random generators. Like I have one on my tablet, or just names. Names are usually...
Yeah.
But what I would like is that thing that Andre got, which was all the cardboard or...
That's the
Bestiary box. It's the Codex NPC box.
The matching tokens for that book, but yes.
Which is... That would be nice.
When did you get those?
That was the other day.
I got that.
Very cool.
I have green dice. They're neon, like
almost acid green. Yeah.
Pretty cool.
I think Pathfinder will be fun.
So the other good news is I quit one of the two jobs. Like I said, I was going to. I have now put in my notice, and
so you're now just a pimp.
Yes.
Yeah. You know,
pimping ain't easy.
Especially in Kansas City. Jeez.
I know. You have
so much
all the way down to Troost.
It was so much easier in New Jersey.
Oh, yeah. A lot more places. Out here, not so. It's kind of.
You get too many religious people out here. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. But they're a good customer base.
They are. You get the really repressed ones. It's great.
It's you know, and it helps pay the bills.
But then they read Ghost Walk and they're depressed.
They're like, I'm just going to stand in line. Occasionally someone's going to show up and take me out of the line. Wow, it sucks.
I just saw some puppies and they just ceased to exist.
Ghost Rock should just be marketed to
I do have to
people who have suicidal tendencies.
Yeah, we keep saying the word ghost, and it just helps me, makes me think of what happened this week. Rest in peace,
Hal Ramis.
Hal Ramis. Egon Spengler. Just
That's sad.
It is sad. It is really sad. It's somebody I know compared it to our generation. John Lennon died because the group will not.
Did you ever play the Ghostbusters RPG?
I did not.
From West End Games. It's not easy to find anymore, but it might be able to find a PDF.
I was gonna say PDFs are wonderful.
Somewhere out there in the internet world.
Check Noble Knight. Noble Knight's usually pretty good for that kind of thing. But man, yeah, with Rick, I keep wanting to say Rick Moranis. It's not Rick Moranis. It's Hal Ramis.
Yeah, I think Rick Moranis is the why.
Yeah, kind of Ghostbusters alum, but yeah.
It's about $90.
Is it?
Holy
I used to have it.
But with Hal Ramis, I mean, yeah, the hopes of a Ghostbusters 3 are kind of like not going to happen now. Because if it does happen, it's not going to be written by him, and it's just Because he wrote, I was looking at his filmography, and he wrote a lot of stuff that you don't even like realize. And even recently, he wrote a bunch of movies and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do.
Oh, and Hal Ramis? Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's.
I mean, but I think the last thing he wrote before he died was actually wasn't a great movie, but he wrote Year One, that Jack Black and comedy. Right.
Well, it may be better for a third Ghostbusters to never happen. Sadly.
Well, the closest
video game.
Yeah, I was going to say the closest thing I've had. Was the Ghostbusters video game, and man, if you've never played it, it's a good alternative to a Ghostbusters 3 movie.
Well, I was in Kansas City when the Ghostbusters craze was going on, and there's a building in Kansas City where one of the buildings was actually part of first Ghostbusters movie.
It was inspired. The building in Ghostbusters was inspired by a building in downtown Kansas City.
Oh, which one? The main building that they used?
Yeah, the one that goes there.
The main building, the apartment building.
It's not the same building they use because it's a set, but it's the building inspired in Ghostbusters.
Having been to, having lived in near New York all my life, my dad, of course, took me to the exterior of the firehouse that they used for War Ghostbusters.
I'll have to track down and see if we can find a PDF or something of the RPG.
I was a huge Ghostbusters. Like Ghostbusters was my thing. I had so many action figures. I had the tower. I had the car. I had all the action figures. My mom, when I remember 8 years old or something, and my mom found at JCPenney found a Ghostbusters uniform, like the jumpsuit. So I would come home every day, put the jumpsuit on. She also found me this like an elastic latch belt with the logo on it.
Remember the bat packs?
I had the proton pack. I had the trap. I think I had the slime pack from the second movie.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever play the Commodore 64 game?
No, yes. I never played the Commodore 64. I played the NES game.
Commodore 64 game was awesome.
Well, it was pretty much impossible.
It was impossible, but
you could get
it was played as if you were making your own franchise, Ghostbusters franchise. So it's like you got to buy the first car you had was like a Volkswagen Bug. It was a piece of crap. But you're like two guys.
Yeah, you could get the bigger car.
And as you went on, you gained more money and you upgraded your vehicle. You upgraded all this. It was pretty sweet.
At the
end, it was impossible.
At the end, you had to. the State Puff, Marshmallow Man, he was jumping in front of the building. Mm-hmm. You had to run under his legs. I don't know. I've never known anyone who got past that. I never got into the building. But it was a fun game. You caught ghosts. Made money.
That sounds good.
It was fun. Just impossible. So.
Yeah. I always loved Ghostbusters, the TV show, and the movie.
The original.
What? The real TV Ghostbusters? Show,
the real event was.
Well,
I was totally ripped off. I mean, there's another one that was ripped off.
Yeah, I know. Yep.
I had the Proton pack, too. I got it and turned it into a rocket pack, the Rocketeer.
But the even the 1990s Extreme Ghostbusters.
Oh, God, I hated that one.
Well, they just totally ripped them off.
They did, but...
Yeah, they did. there was no one, yes.
There's no one here. There's none of that. They ripped them off.
But it was... I don't know. I was a huge Ghostbusters kid.
That's
I
cool.
was huge. I went back and watched some of the Ghostbusters episodes.
God.
And
I bet they're so bad now.
Some of them are terrible. What's really funny is they... And I didn't realize this. In the very first episode, if you go back and watch the very first episode, they actually explain why everybody has different colored uniforms in the TV show. They actually show the tan uniforms in the very first episode. They're like, oh, no, we've got, like, different uniforms for everybody now. And so everybody, like, Egon had his white and red, and everybody had, like, different uniforms.
Well, I liked how in the cartoon they actually showed... The, what's that?
Vintage Ghostbusters complete proton pack, PKE meter, armband, in box. The reason, $295.
Yeah.
Now that's the, let me see that for a second. That is the animated series one, I think.
They may have also done a movie version. I liked how in the TV show they actually showed, like, what was inside
the
place they kept
right.
And then they did occasionally
in there at one point.
Yeah, they did. And then it was so depressing. It was like,
yeah.
And then they showed the actual ghost world, and it was a cat. But they showed the ghost world and all the weird crap. I mean, it was a fun. I liked He-Man better, but
that's fine. I actually was not. Oh my goodness! Sorry, I found another version of a sealed version of that proton pack. It's $2,000.
How old would you have been during He-Man's?
He-Man was started what year?
God, He-Man, the dawn of time.
Yeah, when there was dirt.
Yes, back when there was dirt. When I was a small child. Enjoying He-Man.
You were probably a wee young one.
I hate to... Oh my god, I want it.
Yeah, don't buy it. Whatever it is, don't buy it. You need your money for something. Yeah, I don't need that. Not for $50. No.
I'm going to be 1983 to 1985. You were not even born.
I wasn't born. I was born the year.
Oh, I'm not going to say what almost came out of my mouth. I so want to because it's horrible.
Go ahead.
I don't do. Nope.
Go ahead.
Nope. Can't.
You can. You totally can.
I can't. Anyway, so, He-Man.
And there was a He-Man RPG.
That's awesome.
You realize that, right?
That's awesome.
Yeah, my two big things as a kid were,
it was put out by FASA, and it was one of those things that, let's see if I can find a picture of it. It's one of those things that wasn't entirely on the up and up with licensing.
Sweet.
So they couldn't use the cartoon images.
Oh, God.
Yeah. But FASA, this is around when FASA also got sued for using for doing the Doctor Who RPG and using stills from the TV show without permission.
Goodness.
That was,
You know what I would consider a He-Man RPG? Even though it's a lot bloodier, Conan.
I mean,
it's a similar thing. It's just in He-Man, there's crazy mutant monsters, and in Conan, there's Conan. And that's actually kind of awesome. I'd put it under different rules, but
Yep, yep. He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. They haven't had it in stock since 2012 at Nova Might, just so you know. That's how hard it is, how hard to find it is. Although I believe I have a PDF of this somewhere. Yeah.
Nice.
And that was the only thing they that of the line. But yeah, they that was back in FASA. FASA put some questionable things out.
Yes, boys and girls, please, if you're
that was early. Remember, that was early FASA. That is not the new FASA.
No.
If you're going to put out a game, make sure you pay the licensing fees.
Or no, that's not important. That's clearly not important. That's clearly not important.
Mm-hmm. If it has an SRD, follow the SRD rules.
Yes.
Stealing is wrong.
Oh, yeah, I also on the Ghostbusters front, I will save my money and buy this. They approved on QSO the 30th anniversary Lego sets for Ghostbusters.
Really?
Yes. It's like gonna be like one big set, and it's gonna have the Ghostbusters, the car, and the firehouse.
That's pretty awesome.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Did you see the I don't know if you saw the link. Well, you know how you can go on and suggest things for them. And
right,
there are certain things that they can't do because of licensing, and they put up a post saying, well, we couldn't because of licensing, but the following properties are open because the licensing has been reopened, and it's Doctor Who. So you could potentially see some Doctor Who Legos.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Oh, that'd be nice. Well,
kind of weird,
maybe they changed.
Understand Doctor Who has gotten crazy popular here.
Maybe they've changed the rules, but the way a lot of QSO works is like you can put whatever you want on QSO and try and get the votes. If it gets enough votes, Lego will then go, all right, we'll try and get the licensing worked out.
Yeah, and that's what it was. Is it's been suggested, obviously, numerous times, but it was one of those things where they said, we can't get the license for it. Right. It's just not going to work. But they put up a thing saying,
hey, we got the license.
Hey, it's like the following ones can be suggested again because licensing is now an option. And the only one they listed was Doctor Who. So,
well, I've seen some pretty interesting mock-up sets for things like Legend of Zelda and various TV shows. There was a Serenity one.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah. I mean, they've got some nuts.
Well, that's how they stay fresh.
Yeah.
And they have their
Lego
cast stuff.
You know, it's funny. Go walk into the Lego store. It's less and less their own stuff and more licensed.
Oh, no. It totally is more and more licensed.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say, their castle line is now repeating the castle line stuff I had.
Oh, for sure. I'm sure. That's why not?
Okay.
I mean, the only difference is they've improved the quality of like the you don't have you really don't see that one.
Yeah,
Lego anymore. The two dots and the smiley. Mm-hmm. You don't see that.
All of those.
But you don't see that.
One or two.
You just don't see. Yeah.
Oh, and don't buy Chinese Legos. They are not real Legos.
Because they're full of lead?
No, but they are cheap.
Or it's recycled baby girls?
No, it could be.
Because they have lots of them?
But
that's a terrible...
It could be, but all I know is...
We know that they don't care about humans. I was
ripped off by one.
And they can't listen to our podcast anyway, because it's China, so I don't care.
No, but the Chinese government will listen, and they'll come after us.
Oh.
I'm not really worried about that.
I seem afraid.
Yes. If they want to waste their time coming after some 34-year-old overweight man in Kansas, then they have their priorities mixed up.
Right. So.
We will invite them.
There was another one Lego set that I really wanted. It was the B-wing fighter for Star Wars. It was like two and a half feet long. It was huge. May the 4th last year, they put it on sale for 75% off.
Jeez.
And they sold out in like 2 hours.
Yeah, a lot of that.
But they haven't brought the set back.
Well, yeah.
They're not bringing the set back.
Do you know that they have this is how important their sets are to them. They have a sealed
facility that has the sets, each set, like a closed, sealed facility.
Speaking of Star Wars, though, have you heard the rumor that's been going around?
Yeah. What's that?
Well, you know Benedict Cumberbatch read for a part.
No.
In the movie. And the general conjecture and the rumor running around is Thrawn.
I thought they said they were not going to do Heir to the Empire.
No, Thrawn. Admiral Thrawn.
It's the fans going crazy, mind you.
Okay.
But I'm just saying, Benedict Cumberbatch
would be great.
Benedict Cumberbatch is Grand Admiral Thrawn.
The only alien admiral. Sun Crusher all the way.
It's been established that I will watch Benedict Cumberbatch pretty much in anything because he's an amazing actor.
I would watch that whole thing. I would be like, I would spend money.
What's funny is, if they decided to just do either like Heir to the Empire or Jedi Academy or
Admiral Thrawn, I don't care. All of this is useless.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go. The Zahn trilogy. It's been decided. No, I don't think they're going to do it, and I don't think it's for Thrawn.
Well,
that would be pretty awesome.
The question is, okay, why not? Why not take, I mean, because it is one of the most successful stories of all time. It is established Star Wars canon,
and it's awesome.
It's awesome.
Even though he was a villain, he is awesome.
Well, yes.
He's a smart villain.
He's a very smart villain. Actually, he's
so good at what he does.
I will give you
three reasons.
Oh, I'm sure.
Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, Mark Hamill. You've read the stories. You know how big their parts are.
Yeah.
In the story. That's not going to happen.
Yeah. That's true.
The one is a bit coked up. One you can't understand, and the other is a little fat.
The, I will.
I don't care. Admiral Thrawn.
Right. You know what I was messing around with the other day? Shadows of the Empire for N64. Did you not like that game?
I don't like that game.
Really?
That's fine. I remember when that came out. That was everywhere.
And had an
RPG book from End Games.
I'm sure it did.
D6 Star Wars.
They had a lot.
Have you had a chance to play Heir to the Empire or Edge of the Empire yet? The Star Wars.
RPG. I played it at KidCon under Sterling Hershey.
Okay, because it's out. I mean, it's available.
Well, yes, they have the full Edge of the Empire now, and they're working on the second set, which I don't remember what it's called.
Because I would be interested to know what you think about it, because you being very much a fan of D6 Star Wars, and you're looking at me like my head's on fire.
Jeremy's of the opinion that you don't need anything after D6 Star Wars.
There's something beyond D6 Star Wars, because it was perfection.
No, I haven't played it.
It's good. It's definitely that fantasy flight.
I played Saga.
Saga wasn't bad.
Saga needs a little tweak.
Then it got
but it was expensive.
And
I'm still only missing two Saga books.
I thought you're only missing one.
I'm only missing one Saga book right now.
The Unknown Regions.
I'm
missing.
I would have to kind of read through it because I don't know. And that would entail getting a copy.
You know what's really sad is I've actually never seriously run a Saga campaign. I own all the books. And I'm proud of my collection. That is the one. I love those books. They're beautiful books. I know you hate the format.
At least they weren't as bad as Alpha Omega.
Yeah. Now.
These at least
we play Jawas and Ewoks.
I would totally run that game.
Jawas and Ewoks. You're all Jawas and Ewoks, and you wake up on this spaceship. You don't know how you got there, but you're all Jawas and Ewoks on a spaceship.
It's all good.
That sounds like a good can't go.
Go.
And at that point.
See, the Jawas.
Give them the lions after you. You can say Uka Uka Lula.
Well, there are those speaker things on your phone that Jawa and Ewok.
I'm freaking beanie.
That would be funny. It would be amusing. I would probably play it. I don't know. What's the difference between?
I think that would get old after about 30 seconds.
It depended on how you play it. Well, the sound would. I would probably throw that across the room.
Yes.
What's the difference on the game itself?
What do you mean?
Edge of the Empire?
Yeah.
The stats are kind of...
Keep in mind...
Are they weird?
They're a little weird.
I don't like weird. Weird scary.
Did you look at the Warhammer RPG put out by... You know those dice they use?
Yeah.
Star Wars versions.
Yeah, they use...
I'm not saying that they definitely...
I have some of those dice.
It's not... It's not the same. It's not the same. They do use a lot of those dice and they... Some of that idea of... Dice countering dice, like you roll against yourself, kind of thing during combat.
I think I have some of those dice. I don't know. We're using
it. It was actually. I will say I had a ton of fun playing. When we did Edge of the Empire, I actually kind of wanted to keep going.
How fun are the Jedi?
They don't have Jedi yet. Or they do, but
the game doesn't exist then. So there's no point in talking about it, because really, when you play Star Wars, you're going to play a Jedi.
Or they don't necessarily have full Jedi.
I am going to have to agree with him on that. Not Star Wars, but we have Jedi, because otherwise it's just
streaming. The whole idea...
It's just generic science fiction.
The whole idea of like Edge of the Empire is, there are some force power rules, but like it's supposed to be like mainly like bounty hunters, smugglers, and soldiers. Which is why it's called Edge of the Empire.
I think the second book is what they did with
Warhammer 40K.
Yeah, they're split. Yeah, the next book is going to be like,
can I play a dwarf in Warhammer 40K?
40K?
No. Yes.
There's some...
A space dwarf.
How come there are space dwarfs?
I don't know, but I want to play that.
They had... What did they have?
One point they had space dwarfs, so...
Yeah.
Squats.
Squats, that was it, yes.
I had some. It was the miniature one? The tiny game?
Epic.
Maybe.
It was called Epic.
I had Squat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Alrighty. Well, it's getting late.
Yep.
There's no Jedis.
There's no Jedis.
Sorry. Force users.
So I think we're going to wrap it up at that and call that After Dark episode done. We're going to stick a fork in it.
After Dark. Alrighty.
Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you again next time.
Catch you on the flip side.
In a world where it's only available for download on GamersHavenPodcast.com. The Gamers Haven Podcast presents Mutants and Masterminds 3rd Edition, Justice City United. Featuring the Gamers Haven regulars Eric, Jeremy, Robin, and Tracy. GM'd by Ethan. In a world of superpowered intrigue, can four heroes trust one another while trying to make a difference? An alien threat, a complacent government, and a sinister villain are only some of the obstacles these four need to overcome in order to be some of the world's greatest heroes. Will they be legends, or will they be forgotten? Only time can tell. Justice City United.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.